Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, we're here to talk football. So what did we talk about pre-show in our prep? Golf. We talked about what's the best decade of music. We talked about golfing. You tell me about your golfing exploits. I tell you a golfing joke. We had a good pre-show conversation.
We're ready to talk football now. We talked about things that got us in a football mood. That's what we needed to do. We needed to be gotten into the football mood. That put us in it. I think we're in there. Let's go, Jimmy. Let's fire it up.
Music, golf, and football. But before we start, we just got to mention to our listeners, we debated a little bit about the best decade of music. It might be a little bit of what we grew up with. You and I came down with the 60s and the 70s. I want our listeners, you can interact with us through the Ask Andy tab. Let us know when was the actual best decade of music, okay?
Yeah.
I'm a 60s guy, Andy. That was, I think, the greatest decade in music history. We'll see what our listeners have to say. But, Andy, we're actually here to talk football. We've been reviewing that Penn State-West Virginia game from last week. I think by all accounts, it was a good outing for the Nittany Lions. And we've kind of gone through the game with all of our shows this week. And we always touch base with you late in the week. But right. I always still want to get your take on the game. Not necessarily go over the game, review it. But you always have some takeaways from the game. That's what I want to hit. What's your handful, maybe four or five takeaways from this game, Andy?
Yeah, so I look at things and by the time you and I talk, you've already digested, looked over, gone back. I look at it going forward, right? Like what stood out or what grabbed my attention, good or bad, right? Good, bad, and the ugly. Either way, what grabbed my attention and why it's important going forward. So I start with your two new offensive tackles, right? There's a reason Anthony Duncan started at right tackle and won that job. You saw it completely. Like, he was borderline dominant as a right tackle. Now, and look, West Virginia's defensive line is not top 10 in the country, but they're not bad like their secondary, right? That, by the way, West Virginia's secondary was bad. We talked about that last week. He was very good. Drew Shelton, exactly what you thought Drew Shelton was, which is exactly what you wanted, right? So for me, this is a very big deal for Penn State. And, you know, just to let you fans know, because you were replacing not one, but two NFL draft picks at the tackle position. And for this to be solid from the jump, that is going to help this team tremendously over the course of the long haul. Because it was really good right from the jump, and it stuck out to me. So that was my first one, Jimmy.
And Andy, I think we could talk about the entire offensive line playing pretty well. You didn't see this, Drew Aller always under duress. They opened up some big holes like Nick Singleton's big run. We saw a big hole there. As far as mistakes go, I think there was a and I think it was Donka who jumped at one point. Then we had the early snap at one point from Nick Dawkins. By the way, I do want to mention something on that fumble, because the snap came early from Nick Dawkins, and Drew Aller complained to the official pretty vociferously that the defender had clapped. Early in the week on a show, like watching the game, I didn't see the clap. Even when they showed the replay, where you can look at the West Virginia defense, I think my focus was on the defensive line, the linebackers. So I mentioned I didn't see it on the replay. Well, guess what? A lot of our listeners saw it. Let me know. I rewatched the game, and yes, it is very obvious that the safety, who, by the way, is standing right next to an official, he did clap, Andy.
Yeah, I thought the way Drew Aller complained that there was a clap, I don't think it was the best day, if I had one, you know, for the officials, the replay review, couple of the spots, the 55-yard pass to Evans. I mean, come on, that was offensive pass interference by the textbook. So the breaks went both ways, right? Penn State should have been called for offensive pass interference. That 55-yard pass play should have never held. I thought in the possession before, I didn't think that was a first down. I didn't think they made the line of the game. I thought the clap happened because of the way Drew and the rest of the offense and the Penn State coaching staff reacted. They missed that. So I think it equaled out, but there was clearly a clap.
To your point, though, it was not a good day for the officials.
Or the replay booth.
And in marking those balls where it went to replay, and both times they were wrong, Andy, I think when the game's live and you mark the ball like that, especially on those, you know, fourth and short or third and short, I could forgive the officials on the field for getting it wrong. It's a lot of bodies there, a fast game, a lot going on. I can't forgive the replay officials, though, for getting it wrong. They have the benefit of time and multiple replays. And for them to get it wrong, Andy, come on.
So here's the thing about the spots, right? Like, it's the eye test, Jimmy. The thing I think that goes that officials are kind of losing a little bit. The live, I'm watching, and I don't have any skin. I'm like, oh, he didn't make it. Oh, that's, you know, that's your first eye test. And if I'm sitting there watching it and go, oh, that he didn't get there. And then the second part of it is you see, ah, that's close. Like, he got really close. Then it doesn't matter what the replay official says. It comes down to the spot on the field. If you're watching it, you're like, oh, man, I don't know if he made it, but he might have made it. He got close. And then he clearly makes it. But these were clearly – he didn't make it. They were eye test obvious to me. So, you know, not to divulge on the officials and look back. So, but, yeah, it was part of the game.
I do want to – the offensive pass interference – I agree in that that is typically how it's called, and the way Joel Klatt explained it, when you extend your arms with the defender, that's typically what's called. However, the one thing I will make note of is that the West Virginia player initiated the contact.
Don't care.
It wasn't the offensive player initiating the contact.
Don't care.
It was the defensive player. So he, in essence, was getting the defender off him. So my take is, Andy, you could have also called it on the defensive player for initiating the contact. My take is when they're both doing something, just let them play.
No, you're wrong. Anyway, because he called for the defender's ability to defend. The defender contacted, but he did not make any altering contact to Amari Evans. Amari Evans extended his arms and pushed him. That is textbook, by the letter of the law, by the rule, offensive pass interference. It was a bad call.
Okay, I'll let you have that one, Andy. let's go. I'll move on. Again, some of your highlights from the game, yeah. Some of your takeaways. First thing you talked about was the offensive tackles, and good. I'm in agreement with you.
Yeah.
And it's the offensive line. Again, it's the kind of thing where if you don't really notice them, that's probably a good thing. And that was pretty much the case until the game ends and you say, hey, wait a minute. They didn't allow a sack, did they? Drew Aller was pretty much upright the whole game. So then it's only in hindsight you look back and say, you know what? They did a pretty good job. So I like that one, Andy. What do you got up next?
Yeah, your Penn State's defensive tackle rotation is borderline elite, Jimmy. It's they've even developed from last year. It's kind of the same, you know, it's the four same guys. It's, you know, it's Devon J. Thomas, Zane Durant, Kazai Izzard, Hakeem Beeman. It feels like we've been saying those names forever, right? When we've been talking about defensive tackles, and we have. They are four potential NFL-type roster players that have developed, and they're rotating through the inside of the defensive line, and they're just very comfortable, confident, understand what each role is and what they're doing. And, man, they are the table setters, in my opinion, for what this defense can accomplish in 2024, because they're not your 325-pound NFL stud defensive tackle, first or second-round draft pick that you've craved for years, Jimmy. And I'm not busting you on that. I'm just saying, you've like Penn State needs one of these, and I'm like, they got four, and it looks like it's better than one. So I just think they are the table setters. They are the inside presence. They are the, I mean, West Virginia wants to run the ball to win the football game. They didn't run the ball across the street effectively. So hence another big reason they didn't win this football game. It's because they couldn't penetrate the inside of the defense at all. These guys are really, really important in what this defense is going to accomplish. They are not the highlight reels. They are not the bling guys. They are not going to get the numbers and a lot of attention. But if you're a Penn State fan, do me a favor, just watch them.
And you know what, Andy? You mentioned how Penn State fans have craved that one big monster defensive tackle. Yep. And that's probably the hardest thing in college football to get, because there's so few of them. And when they come around, they go to Georgia, you know, they go to Alabama. So Ohio State. What this team has shown, though, is you could do it a little bit different way. Yeah. And, as a group, having all four of them, maybe none of them is that great superstar stud first round pick. But combined, it's like a baseball team with a long lineup, you know, where everybody could hurt you. That's what's going on here. And the fact, Andy, that they all came back was so significant.
I thought it was one of the biggest comebacks. Is it made their roster, it made a sticky wicket for their roster. But when you saw what I saw on Saturday and then peeked one eye in the future, I'm like, okay, now you're glad you had that roster problem. I mean, they are collectively, Jimmy, they're borderline elite.
And that's it. It is a collective of that group. And we spend a lot of time talking about these defensive ends, you know, where you have a couple of stars like Abdul Carter and Denai Dennis Sutton. And you have other players. You have an upcoming star in Tony Rojas at linebacker. You have people like KJ Winston and Jalen Reed as the safeties. It's unfortunate, but these tackles get forgotten. So that's why I'm really glad you brought them up, Andy.
Thank you, Jimmy. Yeah, I think they are very relative in my point, I want to emphasize it for you, Penn State fans. They are your table setters. They open the doors for the athletes to be unleashed. I really think they are.
All right, Andy, we got your first couple takeaways from game one. We'll get some more of them when we come back in quarter two.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim. He's Andy. We're talking Penn State football. Well, we talked a little about music and golf also, most of that pre-show, fortunately for you folks. Although I got to tell you, when Andy talks about golfing, he's talking at a different level than what I talk golf at. And most of our listeners, I think, I talk golf. I've been out with Andy. He's an incredible golfer. He's a great golfer.
I'm just like everybody else. I can suck just as much as I can play well. It's not that hard. The line between the two is very fine, Jimmy.
I wish I sucked at golf the way you do, Andy. All right, let's get back to your takeaways from game one for Penn State against West Virginia. Great game for the Nittany Lions. You talked about some of the forgotten things or things that get overlooked. The offensive line, specifically the tackles, it was a tackle kind of first quarter. Huge. We talked about the offensive tackle. We talked about the defensive tackles. What else did you have as your takeaway list? from game one.
Yeah, Penn State fans, your number 11 is going to be a big-time problem for defenses. I know the reviews are mixed, right, on his performance. And if I will just say this, and I'm going to be a little bold. You don't know football if you think number 11 did not have a good game against West Virginia. Now, he's learning a new position, and he's not very patient, right? Okay, jumping off sides and the late hit, that was a late hit. Those are things that are clean-upable, right? The impact that he had, he came close. He was very, very close, and this was his first crack at it. He drew double teams several times just out of cause and allowed other things to happen. He is close because the second move is where he will have to work a little bit at his craft. But to see that and to be that close, he didn't wreck the game. He is really close coming off the edge, and he is only going to figure it out and get better. That is going to be a real problem based on what I saw in the first game. And I think James Franklin backed it up and said, look, from our measurables of what we're looking for, he played a very good game. And I saw the same thing. I'm like, okay, 11 had himself a really good football game. It wasn't the numbers. It's not about the numbers with him. It's going to be a different kind of numbers game with 11. He is going to be a problem. That's all I'm going to say.
And I think the play where there was the sack and forced fumble, where he was being double teamed, if he's taking two guys away, that's going to open up things for other folks. And like you said, Andy, the offsides, that's he's anxious. Yep. He wanted to make a play. And I think even with the late hit, again, that's him being anxious, wanting to make a play. And that stuff, that is fixable. So if there's going to be the mistakes, I'd rather that. The rest of the game, if you kept your eyes on him, you saw what he can do. All right, Andy, what's up next?
Yeah. Houston, we've got a kicker problem, I think. I mean, Sander Sahadak, they tried him in the West Virginia game last year, missed two short field goals, kind of never really kicked again. They tried him in this game, extra points, fine, they're extra points. It was that missed field goal, Jimmy. It's a 40-something yard field goal, right? The game's over. It has no impact on the outcome of the game. The points don't matter. It's just get yourself a kick and put it between the yellow thingies, right? Like, get it between the uprights, kid. And he's got more leg than most. My gosh, does he have a leg that's ridiculously strong. But that wasn't even close. And the closer it got to the goalpost, the worse it got. It was almost like a shank, talking about golf. It was kind of a kicker shank. And, I mean, I think they have to work in Chase Meyer and see if, and figure this out. But I just don't think you can put him out there to kick a 40-yard field goal right now, Jimmy. I don't know if you can trust him to make it if it mattered. It's not going to matter over the next couple of weeks, but they need to figure something out. Practice isn't what matters. It matters what you do on Saturdays. And right now, I think this kid's 0 for 3.
In the next couple of weeks, they have to figure it out. Where yeah. I think there's, you know, these are the kind of games where kicking field goals isn't typically a priority. I think it'd be like, hey, look, we could try other things, learn other things, go for it on fourth down. I think for these next couple games, they ought to, if there's an option to kick a field goal, try it. You've got, to your point, they've got to fix it. It was interesting at his press conference, James Franklin could have gone the route like, well, it's a competition. It was a close competition. It'll be a competition going forward. Instead, he professed confidence and said, hey, Dex. So we'll see if that was for real or not. All right, Andy, I think you have one more takeaway from the game.
Wide receiver's still a problem, Jimmy. I know that everyone's like, wow, what about Wallace? Yeah, Wallace was outstanding, right? Who was targeted? Who did Drew Aller even look at the wide receiver position?
Wallace. You know,
right, exactly. And it really looked like no other wide receiver was part of the offense and sort of part of the plan. And that could have been by design, Jimmy. That could have been part of Andy's sort of how do you cover up, you know, what your weakest link is. However, that's not going to fly because that was not a good secondary. That was not a good secondary at all. They're going to see much better secondaries over the course of, you know, this season. They still have a wide receiver problem. I'm not saying, look, is Wallace a wide receiver one? Hello? Yeah. And good catch by Amari, right, on the balloon throw. That was a throw it up prayer. I loved it. I loved it that Drew just stepped back and threw it a million miles in the air and said, somebody go get it. Hopefully it's our guy. But there, I didn't see, you know, I think Gallagher had 6 incompletions, and I think I can recall at least 4 of them that were directly at Wallace, and 2 of them were like, whoa, 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 dude, you are fortunate that didn't get picked. So I think the wide receiver is still a work in progress. I don't think it's fixed or healthy by any stretch of the imagination. They've got a couple more weeks to work at it, and I think you're going to see Andy work in some other wide receivers because he has to.
Andy, I'm going to rate it a little bit different than you. I think we're both in agreement. Trey Wallace, he's the guy, he's the man, he's wide receiver one. I'm going to give an incomplete to the rest because they weren't targeted. Liam Clifford, Julian Fleming were not targeted the whole game. But there were so few passes thrown. What was it? 17 of them.
Correct.
And 5 of them, I believe, went to Tyler Warren and the running backs. Okay. So you essentially had a handful of passes that went to the wide receivers, and that's it. Which leads to my segue to this week's game. I'm going to start it with a prediction. I think James Franklin is very aware that Liam Clifford, Julian Fleming didn't get targeted. He was really profuse in his praise of Julian Fleming, even though he was not targeted. So this is my prediction, Andy. Julian Fleming will be targeted early. I think the first pass, that's my bold prediction for this game. The first pass of the game is going to be directed to Julian Fleming.
Not bad. If you want a bold prediction related to this game.
I do.
I will give you mine, which is I have 4 different wide receivers catch a touchdown pass for the Nittany Lions in this game.
Oh, my goodness. That is a bold prediction, Andy.
There you go. We're along the same lines. You're saying the first – yours is more micro. Mine's more macro. If you're looking at it big picture, you're going more granular. But my bold prediction for this game was 4 different wide receivers catch a touchdown pass for the Nittany Lions.
Well, I think, Andy, yes, you're right, that I think we're both going the same way, which is this is an opportunity for the – we feel like the Penn State offense could do anything they want in this game. The Penn State defense is going to get them the ball. So it's like, okay, what do we want to see? What do we want to do? Who do we want to get involved in the offense? And I do think for several reasons – they want to find out if they could trust these other receivers. They want to put on film that, hey, they're more than just one wide receiver is capable of catching the ball. Plus, I think they want to keep those guys happy and involved, you know, get them the ball. It's kind of like with the running backs. If you look and see the number of carries, it's almost as if they're consciously trying to split them 50-50, the carries. And I feel like now they want to do the similar kind of thing at wide receiver.
So let's go bring music into it. Let's say the wide receiver position is a continued going back to the 80s. It's Men at Work. Remember the band Men at Work from the 80s?
Yes, yes. There you go, Andy. Way to tie it all together. All right. So let's, you know, just in the couple minutes we have left in this segment, you know, talk about this game. And I give Penn State credit for scheduling West Virginia, for scheduling a team with a pulse. I don't necessarily like these games where, you know, the point spread is over 30 points, Andy.
Yeah.
But there's still some benefit to it. It becomes, all right, what do you want to see? What do the coaches want to see? It gives us kind of an idea of that. So what is it Andy Shea wants to see in this game?
So everybody has these games, and Penn State needs to have them too, right? Like, I like the West Virginia game, but you need the Bowling Green game. You need one like this. The timing of it is good as well. Start with one. Drew Aller, validate for me, right? It was his best game in a Penn State uniform. There's no doubt about that. Overall, complete. I love that he was a willing runner. Now it's time to validate. Like 11 for 15, 245 yards and 3 touchdowns. Maybe 4 touchdowns. Don't care. something like that so that you look back and you go, yep, it was probably going to be a limited sample size based on the mismatch that this game is going to be. But I'm like, come on, do a little validating. Show me the second level at the same level of Drew Aller against an inferior opponent, because the process will look the same. Wide receiver, men at work, make some progress. Show me what it looks like in the second step. And I understand a little bit with the weapons that he has and it being a, you know, sort of 60-40 game last week, why some of the other wide receivers weren't targeted. That won't be the case this week. Do a little bit on that. Defensively, I don't know. Do you need to see anything else, Jimmy? I mean, good
just keep doing what you've been doing.
Good Lord.
Andy, the thing that I want to see is it felt like Penn State in a lot of these games, they still start slow. They ultimately win big, but it seems like it takes them a while to get started. I don't want to see that this week. I want to see that first possession efficient, march down the field, score the touchdown. And as far as the spread goes, it's like 32, 34 points. It's moved around a bit this week. I'm taking Penn State, and my main reason is James Franklin always seems to cover the spread. If he needs an extra touchdown late, he'll go get it for us. All right, that's it, Andy, for quarter two. Quarter three, your questions, we ask Andy.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Andy Shea. Quarter three means it's time to ask Andy. This is where we're going to take your questions. And if you want to send a question in to Andy, all you got to do is download our app. Just search on Keystone Sports. Keystone Sports, that's all you got to do. Download it. You'll see the Ask Andy button, and you'll be able to send in your question. Before we get started with the questions, Andy, we really didn't spend much time previewing Penn State Bowling Green. I don't think there's any need to.
No.
But I do need to get your prediction for the game. I gave mine, which is just simply Penn State will somehow cover the spread because James Franklin will make sure that they do. It's what he does. I'll allow you to make your pick.
So I have a more intentional pick. I have them covering as well. I have it 55-14, Penn State. And I have 7 touchdowns and 2 field goals. They need to kick some field goals. And I think they need to try and kick some field goals. And I think both kickers need to attempt field goals. I know James expressed confidence in his kicker, but the 55 number is 7 touchdowns with converted extra points and 2 made field goals.
I find it interesting that you have Bowling Green scoring 2 touchdowns.
I think they're going to get a lot of second and third level defense from Penn State. They're not going to get the full metal jacket of the 18 to 19 player rotation, you know, ruining their house. I think you'll still see some of those guys play a little bit. And I say second and third because I think they're going to go 3 and 4 deep in the depth chart in this game defensively because they can. I don't think you're going to see the top 18 play, much more than a half at most.
Well, that's interesting, and I think that's a good point. I felt like they would, because they're so deep, even their backups are pretty good. But you're right. If you start getting to – this is a good game to use those freshmen who you're redshirting them, but they get 4 shots at it. They get 4 games. Good chance this will be one of them for plenty of the folks. All right. Hey, let's get to the folks' questions. Let's start with Adam in Pleasant Gap, who says, Andy, I was at the West Virginia game this past weekend, and myself and the group around me were wondering the same thing. When we have Bo in, why do we leave Drew Aller in the game and split him out wide? He's clearly not a threat, and the DB plays very soft coverage on him. Is this just setting up an eventual play where we'll incorporate Drew, or is there another reason?
They do it to – yeah, that's a good question, Adam. They do it just to spread the field and put somebody out there without a threat. Look, Bo Pribula is not going to throw the ball down the field. So you're not going to put a wideout out there. You put Drew Aller out there. You keep him in the game. You know, can you move the quarterbacks in the pre-motion snap? Can you put Bo Pribula under center and then move into motion and switch them? Yes, you could. You keep both quarterbacks on the field as a threat. I like it. The Bo Pribula thing is, I've had many conversations this week after the game about, you know, his role. And I'm like, look, here's my take. Bo Pribula is not a next level, get Penn State to the college football playoffs as a starting quarterback. He is, however, a valuable, valuable asset and weapon that this Penn State offense needs. So they need him and what he brings. And Andy Kotelnicki just gave you a little sample size as he's going to expand the role for him in just a very small, like almost like an aphrodisiac type, you know, a moose boosh that you get in a restaurant. One bite of what he's going to do. This kid has a lot of options and potential, and Andy's going to tap into it. That's clear. Andy's going to tap into it. Bo Pribula is going to be tapped into, and all you got was an amuse-bouche in that first game of what he's going to offer from that kid.
Amuse-bouche?
Yeah, that's just like the little one-bite thing. Haven't you ever been to a progressive course dinner, Jimmy?
Andy, we've done this show for about 8 years now. That is the first time we've heard that expression on this show. I'm willing to bet on that. I'm a little bit split on this one, and I understand the question. You know, my first instinct, you'll hear folks say, by keeping Drew Aller on the field, you're playing 10 versus 11.
Nope.
Well, no, you're not. You could argue you're playing 10 versus 10 because one guy has to follow him out there.
Right.
And those two guys are just out there wide, you know, discussing music. And Drew Aller's not going to be a target unless you leave him absolutely positively alone. And yes, I do think it's a precursor or something else that they'll do. But I do still understand the point. If you're regularly often just bringing Bo in and keeping Drew out there, you are limiting the offense a bit. I'd kind of like to see Bo out there without Drew so that they have the entire offense available to them. But I also want to see, all right, if you're going to have them both out there, let's see some plays where they're both involved. And I'm sure we will hit that. All right, Andy. Mike from Harrisburg says, with the new offensive coordinator, will we see Tyler Warren at quarterback on third and short or third and goal line? That used to really work. It would also be difficult for teams to prepare for three quarterbacks. What do you think Kotelnicki will do?
Yeah, good question, Mike. It was used in the past. I think Bo Pribula is a better option if you're going to not have Drew Aller at quarterback. I mean, he's sneaky. He's slithery. He's committed. When he makes a decision, he finds holes. If you're putting Tyler Warren in, it's Tyler Warren going to one gap on one play and one option. I think Bo Pribula opens up more options just as a natural athlete. So is it power or finesse? Are you going to go power? Maybe you throw Tyler Warren in there and snap the ball to him. But I think Andy Kotelnicki is a little bit more of a options and finesse guy. And that's Bo in that scenario. And being the willing runner that he was, is Drew Aller going to have a little bit of taste of this? I don't know.
Well, that is the thing. You know, Drew is a pretty big guy. So if you're looking just for that power on fourth and one, I also agree with you with Bo Pribula out there. He gives you, and he's not a small guy either. People often say, he's like Trace McSorley. Well, he's much bigger than Trace McSorley was. Yep. And he's able to carry the ball, able to do some other things also. My question, Andy, is I really liked the T formation.
I know you
and,
did. You
and what they fast. Did out of it. So I wouldn't mind seeing that again. I'm not sure we will. All right. Kevin from Wincote says, I was surprised that Liam Clifford was listed with Trey Wallace as the top of, at the top of the wide receivers. Were you? And what exactly does that mean? Will he be the starter? Now, this question came in before, you know, the West Virginia game. But, Andy, what does it mean when James Franklin said that Liam Clifford and Trey Wallace had separated themselves among the wide receivers?
I think they it to me, it means nothing. It just means, to me, the only thing it meant was there is a certain role that Julian Fleming's going to play, and we had talked about that. There are certain things that he is not capable of doing well, and that they need to – he can't do some of the things that Liam can do, right? But he's way better at a lot of other things. I just think it's the three of them right now. I'm still concerned that, you know, Saunders is just catching punts. As a wide receiver, that is a concern for me. I don't recall seeing him late in the game either. Maybe I did and missed it. But like we said, wide receiver, it's work in progress. Not Wallace, wide receiver one, great game. Saw it last year. Please, dear, you know, Penn State fans, do your rosaries. Please stay healthy, sir. And they need to make some progress. So it's what we have focused on for this week for the Bowling Green game. We want to see the work that's being done in the lab to help the wide receivers take a step forward. Doesn't even have to be a big step, Jimmy. Just got to be a baby step. Show us something.
And you know what, Andy? I think it was a compliment to Liam Clifford when he gave the Trey Wallace Clifford separating themselves. We didn't see, again, I'll go to, it was such a small sample size of passes to the wide receivers. I don't think we could come to any conclusion. And you mentioned Caden Saunders, and James Franklin even talked about him coming off injury.
I know.
Which seems a little strange that, oh, but he's okay for punt returns.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Although it seemed like we thought this would be a fair catch kind of game for punts, and that's what it did turn out to be. I don't know if he actually said, hey, just fair catch the ball. Let's go to Jimmy in Forest City, who says, dear Andy, with all of the early commitments to the 2025 class that have decommitted, how critical is it for Penn State to make the college football playoffs this year and maintain the momentum and retain the 2026 verbal commitments?
I think they absolutely have to make the college football playoffs. For maybe part of it could be for, you know, what you talk about, Jimmy, and the recruiting aspect of it, and sort of, you know, you're going to lose guys because it's the Wild Wild West now, and NIL is part of the equation. It's going to be way normal than you would have thought as a longtime college football fan. Just don't be surprised by them anymore because they're going to happen. They happen to everybody. But what I want to say is, and my point is, this roster and where Penn State has built it to become for this season, that's a college football playoff team. It looks like a college football playoff team, smells like a college football playoff team, has the star power, the depth, the elements of, you know, at the right positions of a college football playoff team. So they have to make it so.
And Andy, first of all, they have not had really all that many decommitments in the 25 class. I looked it up. They had four decommitments.
Yeah, but not bad.
They also took decommitments from other schools coming into Penn State.
Yeah.
So that's just going to be playing part of the equation. I think it's important for them to make the playoffs this year because they're built for it this year. Not sure they're going to be built to make the playoffs next year.
Correct.
So I think it's important to start creating the momentum, keep that momentum going. Right now, their 26 recruiting class looks pretty good, and you want to keep that going. But, yeah, I'm not sure that NIL money is not the more important factor. But correct. What it brings up is the next variable, Andy, is going to be that money that schools are going to be able to direct to the student athletes themselves, that $20 million or so that's going to be the next variable. Figure out what effect that has. All right, that's it for quarter three. Stick around, one more quarter to go.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy. I'm Jim. We're talking college football. Andy, we talked plenty about Penn State. I want to take a look at the national picture with you a bit. And it's natural, you know, after week one, we start making conclusions. But even with the 12-team playoff, where some people think the regular season has lessened in importance, I get that. But I think in a lot of ways, every game still really counts and counts more because you don't have just four teams potentially. For four playoff teams, there might be five or six, seven teams total who may have true, real aspirations for the playoffs. With the 12-team playoffs, all of a sudden, you've got like 20 to 30 teams who could realistically say making the playoffs is our goal. So I think it makes more games important. And through the first week, well, week one and week zero, we've already come to some, I don't want to call them conclusions, but we've already started with some winners and losers from the first week or two of college football. That's what I want to hit with you.
Sure.
Let's start with a winner, Andy. Give me a winner that you have from the first week or so of the season.
Team on Penn State schedule, USC, right? Third year for Lincoln Riley. We've talked about third year and head coaches in college programs. It's sort of like the moving year. Look, this is what I know. The quarterback was exactly what he was in the bowl game, and he was clutch. But, oh, man, USC is bigger and stronger across the board on defense. And their new DC, Deonten Lynn, he came over from UCLA, Penn State guy, and he showed his mettle as a coordinator. Their defense was very simple and basic, right? And more layers will need to be added, and they probably will be added. Look, they still surrendered more than 400 yards to LSU, but they only gave up 20 points. So a year ago, they were outclassed physically when it came to their defense more than anything, and they couldn't stop anybody from crossing the street. Bigger and stronger defensively, that is what stood out. Overall, a big win against LSU in a neutral site game. USC, I think, was a winner this week. And they are on Penn State's schedule, so that makes that game a little more, that's going to be a tough, tough road game.
It does, Andy, and I'm in agreement there. USC is probably better than they were given credit for. But, again, with these new Southeast Conference, the new Big Ten, things get interesting really quickly. And I've brought this up before, but in a couple weeks, USC's first Big Ten game is in the Big House against Michigan.
Yep.
And remember what I said about how there are more big games? That USC-Michigan game is now huge, isn't it?
It is. It's huge for both programs, right? Like, it's an early litmus test. One is the defending champion, one is trying to find its way into the upper echelon of college football again. That's what they are.
One of the winner of that game, we're going to look at differently and say,
correct,
they are a contender to make the playoffs and maybe even get to the Big Ten championship game. All right, I'll tell you what, let's mix it up a little bit here, Andy. Give me a loser.
Oh, Oregon. That was an FCS opponent. I watched a good chunk of that game. By the way, I also, in my demented and sad but social status, watch a good bit of UCLA and Hawaii because UCLA is on Penn State's schedule. And yes, at 11:30, I was watching Washington because they are also on Penn State's schedule and that game was on. So it's Oregon. I wanted to see Oregon, right? The quarterback was exactly what you thought he was. He throws for a ton of yards, but they've never really scored. Teams have never really scored a ton of points around him, but that was an FCS opponent. And that was a dogfight deep, deep into the fourth quarter, right? Talent allowed Oregon to escape, but they were completely outworked and outcoached in that game by miles. It wasn't even close. They won the game, but they lost the battle too. They are definitely seen differently because it's Oregon and they don't win big games. And this wasn't a big game. They won it, but man, that was bad.
It all of a sudden makes Oregon Boise State this week a little bit more interesting.
Correct.
Than it would have been otherwise. All right, let's go back to your winner list, Andy.
Yeah, how about Notre Dame? You know, good win, Texas A&M never quite as measures up to what you think they should be or what everyone thinks they should be. But, I mean, this win, I think, kind of set Notre Dame up to make the college football playoff with relative ease. I mean, look at their schedule. Louisville, Georgia Tech, Florida State, and USC. Those are the four opponents they have left that were ranked, Florida State, or are currently ranked. And they're all in the 20s or late teens. USC's, you know, maybe coming, but, I mean, their schedule. They've got Northern Illinois, Miami of Ohio, Navy, right? And they also got Stanford and Purdue. I mean, we make our own schedule because we're Notre Dame, and that's going to get them a pass to the playoffs. But in some respects, they earned it in this game, and they are still the same Notre Dame. They are physically demanding. And over the course of 60 minutes, that kind of ends up showing up, and that's what happened in the Texas A&M game. In the last, you know, 8-10 minutes, the bigger, stronger, more physically prepared team showed up and won that football game. So Notre Dame was definitely a winner because it set them up in such a good position.
I agree with you, Andy. I had both USC and Notre Dame on my list of winners. And because I'm often a glass half empty kind of guy, I want to throw in a couple losers for you. I want to say the ACC
had them.
A loser.
Yep. I had ACC / Florida State all together.
Yes. And Clemson.
Well, Virginia Tech put NC State.
Yes.
NC State barely won its game, was in a dogfight on, what was it, a Thursday night game, I think, into the third quarter.
Yes.
You know, I mean, Miami won. Yeah, I think the ACC is now, after what, 1 week and a week zero where there were a few games, they've established themselves as we're going to get our champion and our champion only, unless something drastically changes. How can you, based on the results so far, there's no way you can include a second ACC team. You can't.
It looks like, yeah, Miami. If
maybe
they need Miami to be for real, because Clemson, Florida State, North Carolina, you know, a lot of teams didn't look good. I'm going to throw something else out here, and I'm throwing this out more as almost a question than a exclamation mark after it.
Okay.
How about the Southeast Conference? And let me explain why. They had, with Texas A&M losing, LSU losing, Florida losing. Now, I know Georgia at the top is really, really good. We know that. There's a lot of good teams. But I think those three teams, if I had, and I did, I picked all three of those teams to win. Going into their games in week one, they were favored or had a shot at winning, and all three of them lost. I think that's why I have the question mark after it, Andy.
Yeah, I'm not with you on that, Jimmy. I think you saw enough out of LSU and Texas A&M to know that they're still competitive. Like, those teams are going to have a say, right? Like, they're not – like, you weren't, head wasn't cocked sideways. I mean, but then you look at it, I look at the other end, Jimmy, and I go, okay, well, then I'll counter with Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, and Ole Miss. Right? Like,
but did Georgia, definitely Georgia. I mean, we saw what Georgia is. But did any of those other teams play a team with a pulse?
Yeah, I don't – that a lot of teams didn't play teams with a pulse. They so, pulverized teams without a pulse. Pulverized them, Jimmy.
And that's all fine and good, but I'm not sure how much we learned.
Oh, man.
But, you know, and maybe I missed a game, but there were four games where the Southeast Conference played somebody from a power conference or Notre Dame at power independent. Four of those games, and the Southeast Conference came out 1-3 in those games.
Yeah, no, you have a valid point. I'm just saying I need more body of work. I'm not a four-quarter guy on the SEC. I think I had an argument with a Penn State fan. He's like, the Big Ten's better than the SEC. I'm like, whoa, no, depth-wise, no. Not as deep, not even close.
I'm with you on that too, Andy. I still think the Southeast Conference, but I was beginning to think, is how deep is the Southeast Conference? You know, is it 5, 6, 7, 8 teams deep? And now, you know, Florida, I think we all see that schedule that they face, especially the back half of the schedule.
Brutal. It's
brutal.
Yeah.
And that's why I felt they had a shot at Miami, because there's only so many games they have a shot at winning. They better pocket a win when they could get it. They had Miami at home. They weren't even competitive. And I think LSU and Texas A&M were both favored in their games, Andy, and came up short. So I'm wondering, in my mind, still, Southeast Conference is still – top dog, but they're not quite as head and shoulders above everybody else as I thought they were, Andy.
Let me ask you this question, Jimmy. If you're a Penn State fan, do you want to see either do you want to play LSU or Texas A&M and see them on your schedule as you're trying to make the college football playoff and trying to win 11 games? No, you don't. Those are toss-up games still. As good as Penn State
I was going to say, neutral field, who would be favored with those two teams?
It's close, Jimmy. It's tight. Those are tight toss-up games. I'm just saying that's why I think the SEC can go 6 deep, maybe even 7 deep. You know, Penn State still – I just think the SEC is going to might have a depth problem where they're kind of beating each other up. It looks that way, doesn't it, Jimmy, after a week?
Well, actually, in my last note on this, Andy, is because of their 8-game schedule and the number of teams that they have, don't be surprised. They don't play each other enough to beat each other up. You might get a team like Missouri or Ole Miss only losing one game or perhaps two because they don't play as many big games as some of the other teams within the same conference. Andy, that's going to have to be the last word. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.